Right, on your best mix of music, 90.4 Capital FM. Good evening, how are you doing? Come at the time, come at the moment, happens every Thursday, right here on your best mix of music. And it's a Legal Insider. Yes, we do this every Thursday with my brother, my friend. He's a horse racer, he owns horses nowadays. Mutua Mutuku, Wakili of the High Court. My brother, how are you? You're looking at me shocked.
My guy, how are you?
I'm good, sir, I'm good.
Hey, you've done gross misrepresentation here, Bana. People are wondering who can do this, Bana.
Come on, already they know you've been here for how many months now? Come on, bro.
The other part.
Well, you will actually clarify that one at your own time, Mr. Mutuku, which I'm sure you'll do it very well as a lawyer. How are you, my brother? How was your week?
Amazing yourself. I had a fantastic weekend. Correct. How about you?
Yeah, I had a good... I was supposed to call you on Monday for the usual visits, but something came up family-wise and all that, so I couldn't handle that. But Monday, definitely, I'll be joining the group. Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. The conversation keeps going. Let me give you those numbers, 0701-984-984. Hashtag Legal Insider. Hashtag Quick One Wakili. What are we talking about today? We have two guests in studio, as we said, every Thursday, as much as possible. Let's get guests in and they can tell us about all these other things that I mean, this thing is an onion. You can't get to the bottom of it. There's so much to learn. In fact, when Mutua and Nick Ndeda told me we can never even exhaust this show, even in 5 to 10 years' time, I believed you. Let the gentleman introduce us. Let's start from left. Karibu sana, sir. Your full names, who you are. And when did you start? I think it was, 20 years ago? Excellent. Welcome, team.
Asante sana. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me today.
Yes. I'm
very happy to be in studio with a legend, Charles Kieri.
Oh, my goodness.
The other CK at Capital.
Wow, okay. Thank you so much.
Yes. So my name is Tim Dagori. Mm-hmm. I'm a tech lawyer and startup legal advisor.
Yeah. Tech lawyer. Now you see, yes. I didn't know there's a tech lawyer. Yes. If I need anything tech, I can go to a
tech lawyer. Yeah.
I don't have to look for you, Mutua, anymore.
My guy, no. We are stuck together. but also, Tim has a story.
Mm. Okay.
Tim has a Capital story.
Oh, yes. You do?
Yeah.
Okay, when was this? What happened?
No. You know, I've always been...
Were you frozen?
No, I was not frozen.
You trained as
a huge fan of Capital.
Okay.
From Days of the Jam.
Oh.
Of course, Hits Not Homework.
Yes.
I don't know if my millennial age is showing.
Hits Not Homework. Yes.
We were actually in university at the time.
Okay.
School of Law, Parkey.
Right.
And I think I answered a question in the morning during the morning jam. I don't know. I don't remember who the presenters were.
Maybe it was Shanice.
Yeah,
and,
probably.
And Farid Kimani.
Yeah,
it could be. If you talk about Hits Not Homework,
no. In the morning, it was the morning.
In the morning,
show.
Yeah, in the morning. Or it could have been Makbul and somebody else. Okay, yeah.
Good anyway, yeah. So I won 5,000 shillings. Yes.
You've actually won 5,000 shillings. Tour has been listening to Capital all
for years.
never won anything.
Even a Bairo. And I came to pick it. A friend of mine called Brian Babu or Kala Singa, as he's known.
Yeah.
We came to pick the money with him.
Okay.
Yes, and we got it.
Well done. All right. Encourage Mutua as much as possible to keep listening. He's now in Capital FM. He's our lawyer. And Karaoke, welcome to Capital FM, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
My name is Johnson Karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a corporate and commercial lawyer.
Wow.
I run my own business, but I've been employed for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I have 8 years of post-qualification experience, but I have worked at the Capital Markets Authority and worked with a lot of startups from establishment to funding, exits, and I can't wait to have a discussion with you guys.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, wow. That CV is quite interesting. And of course, Mutua Mutuku with us.
Yep.
And very quickly, let me just start very quickly. And this happened in December 2021. It's the Kenya Startup Act, popularly known as a Startup Bill, was passed into law. Now, this act was created to provide entrepreneurs in Kenya a platform for which they can launch their own companies, facilitate expansion, and provide technological advancement to indigenous and foreign investors. And of course, if you just tuned in, we're talking about the legal framework around Kenya startups in Kenya. What is a startup? Kim,
actually,
just
before you get there, remember when you told you this thing, law is a revolving door.
Okay, thank you.
Right? 2 weeks ago, we were here with a gentleman called Oscar. karaoke, remember?
Yes, very well.
And he gave us avenues of what you call vehicles, mm-hmm. on which is the best vehicle to use when you're doing some of these things.
Right.
So as all of them are answer what is a startup, maybe you can give us which is the best possible vehicle in terms of, is it a company, is it a business name, is it a limited liability partnership, which is the best avenue to launch a startup in Kenya. But also, let's first define what is a startup.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good one, Mutu.
Yeah. I think I'll approach it from a global perspective. So there's a rule of 50, 100, 500 that is used in the US, mm-hmm. where a startup ceases being a startup when it has more than $500 million in valuation, more than 100 employees, and the revenues extend $50 million. So I don't think we can apply the same metrics in Kenya.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the normal mwananchi ukipata na huko nje says if you're doing 3 to 5 years, you could be a startup, and then after that, you're not considered one. So there's a street one that is based on time. But I know Tim will talk about the legal part of it. But in terms of business vehicles, I think it depends. So, of course, we are assuming startups are entities that are being started to make a profit. So we'll cull out most of the business vehicles and leave ourselves with a limited liability company and a limited liability partnership. So the considerations you make around there are based on what it is you want to do with the company or the partnership. But there will be tax considerations. There will be considerations on how you want to interact with the people you're coming on board with, and the documentation and cost as well of business establishment.
All right, fantastic. Now, as we kick off this amazing, amazing topic, I want either one of you, before Mutua comes in and throws a spanner into the works, take me to this journey. I want to start this company, and Mutua is my partner. Yes. We want to start this. Take me through this journey. Where will I go first? Who am I going to talk to first? Which organization am I going to, put in somewhere? And then you tell me we'll wait for 3 years to see whether it's going to work. If it doesn't, we throw it out. Or what do you do?
Okay.
Tim or Kim?
Yeah. Sure.
Take me through that journey. Now,
okay.
I want to start one.
All right.
Or tomorrow morning.
Also, that's the point you can also interject and talk about. Mm. Your definition of a startup.
So for me, what I can tell you guys is what a startup is not. Often people tend to think a startup is just a new company. Mm-hmm. But a startup, by my definition, and I think this is generally accepted in the ecosystem, is a startup is one, an entity that you have started. Yes, it's new, but with the goal of it growing fast and big, and then that you're introducing a new novel idea. Usually you're leveraging technology or innovation for that idea. So if I go and open a butchery or a mom and pop shop, that's not a startup. Yeah.
So let me, on that aspect. Yeah. Let me plug in a company that is entrenched in our systems.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When Safaricom launched M-Pesa,
yes.
Is M-Pesa a startup? Was M-Pesa a startup?
Good question.
Yes, wow. Yes. So M-Pesa started as a department of the then Kenya Posta, isn't it? Eventually, then they split up. There was Telkom, which it was still within. Yes, one, there was a novel idea. Two, was it meant to grow big? I don't know if the people imagined it to get to that size. And I think even at the time, was the language there? Yeah. Mm. It was the language there to say this is a startup or it's not. That was when 2000 and this is before even 2010, you know, before Facebook and the rest. So perhaps the language may not have been there, but in the context of today, I think it would have qualified as a startup.
I remember very well 2007. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Charlie.
Yes.
Hey, your age is showing.
No. You know the reason why, I don't want to go into this one, but I remember there was that time after elections, things went really crazy. So you'd get calls about go to the supermarket and get something and bring it to us on Ngong Road. And people could not access to their friends and family and all that. Then shortly after that, M-Pesa came. I remember that it's around 2007, 2008.
But even way before that, I think we could go as far back as 2004, if I'm not wrong. Way before M-Pesa.
That is what I'm talking about. Okay, sorry to interrupt you, sir.
No, it's all right. Yes. Yeah, so by that's what I can say a startup is not. So then what entity would be the best for a startup? I mean, the short answer is a limited liability company, right? Who would you go to first when you're starting a startup? I guess it's you and your founder. Yeah, one of the things I always advise my clients is if you're doing a startup, one, remember I said it's novel and you want to grow big and fast. Yeah, so it's important to go in with a founder, and you'll find if then you're leveraging technology and innovation, then you'll need a founder who's technical and maybe another one who's non-technical, and the ideas gay. Those of us who buy the domain.
so who's a founder?
A founder?
Because I know there's a person listening to this and they're wondering.
Mm. Are they a founder?
Who's a founder?
And also, yes. Mbutu said something, Wakili said something interesting also. And he said something about a butchery, and because that's where we like normally starting, because there's someone who a butcher, I want my butchery to expand. I want to be in Laikipia, I want to be in Nanyuki, I want to be in all these various places. Speak to that person also.
All right. Yeah for sure. Yes. They are important player in the entire ecosystem. Yeah. So the first thing is why or what do you want to do? Like Karyuki said, what do you want to do with the business?
Okay.
There are of course benefits of the different entities. And the reason I would advise that individual to start with a limited liability company is because of some of the benefits of that. You know, it's a separate legal entity away from you. And then if you're going in with a co-founder, you're starting it with someone, you know, there's the equity distribution. If it's a startup, Mutua and myself, and we want our early employees to participate in the company, in the equity or whatever, to incentivize them, then in a limited liability company, they would be able to do that. Yeah.
All right. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Noted. We're recording.
Karyuki has something to say.
Yes, Karis. Yes.
I think there's a question you asked where someone would go.
Yes.
I think in business establishments, Kenya has really tried to use technology and enhance and service delivery. So most of these businesses, they are established on the eCitizen platform under a department called BRS. So if somebody wants to establish a business, what you do is get into the system. Well, they still complain that they can't finish the process without using a lawyer. But ideally, over time, maybe as people get more tech savvy, you're able to go through the system and from the beginning to the end and get your certificate in a few days.
Okay, which brings us to the question about the legal requirements you need to have a startup. What are the legal requirements? Because I have to go into this portal, I have to have all that documentation.
Yeah.
I mean, the standard stuff as a Kenyan, your national ID.
In fact, I can read them very quickly.
Yes.
The business.
Wakili CK.
Because you're the chopies, I have to do my research. It says your business name, but there's also another section here. It says about startups. You need at least three company names, business objectives, national ID. But that's another story we'll talk in a couple of hours. This one says the legal requirements to start a business in Kenya. It's a business name, the nature of your business, land reference number or the plot number, depending on what it is. What if you're in a building? Anyway, postal address, the town name, or if you're in a city, a street name, full names of owner, shown ID and passport, and of course, nationality.
Yeah,
that is true.
That is the requirement.
Yeah.
so that's for a business name.
Okay.
And a business name is quite easy to start. So for the butchery and a hotel and all those other places, I think a business name would do very well.
Okay.
Because you can have as many partners as you want on the business name.
Correct.
As long as they don't get to 50 and then you have other considerations. Mm-hmm. But it's quite easy to start and it's cheap. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, because we are talking about the common mananchi.
Yes.
Maybe 11,000 for incorporation of a company will be too much. Mm-hmm. But now, if you go to a company, there will be more requirements. But what the government has done, or what we have done as lawyers,
yes, please,
and everybody else, is that Now, even the thing that used to be called Articles of Association, which governs a company, and it's a document required to be filed with the company's registry, you're given a model of it. So you just adopt it. So what we're saying here is increasingly, a common mwananchi can access these services without the need to go to Mutua or Team.
Oh, so I just got into a portal and all that. What about the situation? Yeah. Okay, I have come up with a name. Mm-hmm. It's a combination between Kiari and Mutua. And there's this issue back in the day when people used to register companies. And there was this very conspicuous building called Sharia House. And it gave people a lot of sleepless nights. So now I don't have to go through Sharia House.
No, you don't. You simply just go to the eCitizen platform. Yeah, and you know the eCitizen platform, I think it's ecitizen.go.ke. It's like a portal to all these other services. Amongst those services is the BRS, which is the Business Registration Service. So you just click onto that. It opens your dashboard that you should already have if you already had an eCitizen platform. So simple stuff. Yeah.
So does it do a name search?
Yes.
Just in case there's a name search.
Yes, you do. You literally actually go and select the type of entity you want to pick. So in this case, we've decided we're doing a limited liability company. So you pick that, then it'll give you options to choose up to, I think you can choose up to five or six
five names.
Yes. In order of how your priority.
So it does the name for you. It gives you the options of the names.
No. You choose. So like, let's say you'll say you want to do Kariuki Mutua, you want to do Kariuki Mutua Group, you want to do Kariuki Mutua something else, for just for argument's sake, right? Then they say you can't do Kariuki Mutua because there's another company by the same name. So then maybe you had another. The second option is what was okay. So they reserve that option.
So Charlie, in short, what all these gentlemen are saying, the dreaded Sharia House is now the loved BRS, right?
Because
I think we've had the conversations around the the law of business association before. I want us to jump right into it because when you were talking, Tim talked about someone called a founder. When I'm seated down, for example, Kariuki is going to be, me and Kariuki are going to fund this thing. So what are some of the agreements that we need to have? Yes, you can just break it down. What is, you said founders equity, founders agreement. Just tell us, break it down to us. Yes.
I think, thank you. The term founder is used in other jurisdictions, in my opinion, because you'll hardly find founders agreement in Kenya. So there is, but it takes several forms. So you'll see an investment and subscription agreement that that identifies who is putting in the money and what they'll get out of it. Then you'll have a shareholders agreement that will now govern the roles and the responsibilities of the parties and decision making and dispute resolution. You might have, if these people will also be directors, service agreements for the services they'll give to the company. If they'll be employees, some of them are also employees, you might have an employment agreement. But generally, globally, you will see founders agreement used, but technically that's what it covers. Yeah, so that's what it brings home.
I guess a founders agreement, I mean, by any other name, is just a contract between two people setting up an entity. And that document is what really, it outlines their relationship, who's bringing in what, who's doing that, this, that, or the other. And I encourage founders, especially if you're going the startup way, not our butchery guy. If you're going the startup way, if you're going the startup way, have a founders agreement. Because in a scenario, for example, for instance, going back to the example I gave you, you're the technical person, I'm non-technical. Yeah, so maybe I'm an operations guy, maybe you're the guy who can code and all that stuff. So in that agreement, we haven't even set up an entity. So in that agreement, we know that you're bringing in the tech skills. I'm the operations person, I'm the person who's going to do the sales, the growth, I'm the person who's going to do the fundraising and all that. And all that is defined in an agreement. So the expectation is there. I know that this is what you're supposed to do. I know that this is what I'm supposed to do. I also encourage that if before you even give each other shares in an entity, you should have maybe a vesting schedule.
What is that?
No, he'll come and tell me, no, I'm taking 80, you take 20% because I'm the one who's doing most of the work here. I'm just saying.
What is seeding? What is vesting? What are those terms?
Yeah. I'll let Karaoke answer what vesting is. But I just want to say this.
Well done.
I encourage founders at the beginning when you're setting up your entity. I know often people go in and like, but I'm the ideas guy, the idea was mine, so I should have 80%.
Correct.
You have 20. But ideas really don't matter at this point in time. It's what you're going to execute. So I usually advise founders to give each other equal stake or as close as possible to equal. And even though you guys are the founders, let there be a vesting schedule that says, okay, your shares vest as if you do this, you do this, and so on and so forth.
So you've actually defined what vesting is. So vesting is a milestone-based allocation or allotment of shares in a business. So you will say we sat down, we had a founder's agreement or whatever nomenclature you gave it. Then you decided Mutua is going to do A, you're going to do B, I'm going to do C. And when you do it, then you're allotted the shares. When he does this, that happens. But I only mostly it's used not in the in a founder's concept, but in an employee share ownership plan concept, which you're going to talk about. I think there's that question coming up at some point.
But what I'm saying is I encourage even founders to have vesting.
And what is seeding? Because you said
vesting
and seeding.
No. Vesting.
You talked about seeding. What is seeding?
No. Someone said seeding. I couldn't have gotten that term from you.
I don't have. It's not me.
But do you mean seeding? SEEDING? Anyway, but so it's important that you keep the interest in the startup. Because imagine a scenario where we've done the founders agreement and everything. We've agreed. Then we incorporate the limited liability company. We've started, we've given each other shares. Then 3 months in, you've quit your job. We were working on this 3 months in, you're like, no, me, I've left. Then you continue, you build the startup, you do all that. A year down the line, Charles Karaoke, who has a lot of money, comes and tells you, I'll give you $1 million for this. And now this guy who has not been working, not been doing anything, he even abandoned you, still has his stake in the business.
So you've mentioned a very crucial thing that I wanted to come to.
Yeah.
Now, Karaoke and Dagori, you've sat down, you've come up with this crazy idea.
Mm-hmm.
Put it on paper. Yeah. You said, I'm the technical guy, you're the operations guy, we're going to go this route, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you start. And the milestones are here, the vesting is happening,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Someone cited that who has some crazy amounts of money.
Mm-hmm.
Comes in and says, guys, this is a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I want to pump in money.
Mm-hmm.
So how are his interest taken care of? And also, what ensures that when he comes in and brings in the big money, that you'll be taken care of and you will be taken care of? What ensures that that happens?
All right.
Mm-hmm. From where I sit, I've had the opportunity of representing both the founder and the investor. And ideally, what you look out for if you're working for either side is very different. Of course, I wouldn't use, or let me just use it. I'll use the word predatory. From an investor's perspective, when you're coming in, you want to get as much value as you can.
Mm.
And from the founder side, you want to give as less value as you can. Of course, at some point you get to a compromise because every party is represented. But from where I look, it takes, first of all, some consideration of the structure of investment that you want to have.
English?
And you're nine apple. Yeah.
Okay.
So investment can either be in purchase of the shares,
mm-hmm.
which is called equity. Then it could be debt, where they come in, give money, get interest, get repaid, and they leave. Or you can have a structure that takes both. So where you have the bringing the debt, but then it can be converted to equity at some point. So if you are a startup that is thinking about keeping control of your business, of course you want as much debt as you want as you can get, because you'll grow your business and then repay the debt and they're gone. If you are an investor who's thinking, Karaoke and team have started a business and tomorrow it might be the Safaricom, you want to put in money now and grow as and as the value grows, then your equity grows. So you would be thinking about coming in and buying shares. But if you're just shopping the way we shop and buy land for speculation, then you can give a loan and have some triggers that then convert it into a debt. Like if you get to a certain value in terms of valuation, then it converts. If you have another round of investment, then it converts, because you can see that there's value that is coming in and people can see that this business is growing. So you want to grow with it. So that's the consideration I would take from a financial structuring perspective. But in terms of the business now preparing itself for such a future endeavor, what you do is you just keep your documentation as proper as you, as it would be required. And here lawyers come in place to assist you with what has been requested. So you just keep your house in order so that if it's ever requested, then all you'll do is give it to the investor.
Can I go back to the LLC? So the limited liability company. So what usually I'd advise two founders to do at the point of incorporating, for example, you're going to be asked how many shares you want to create. Create whatever amount, whether it's 1 million, 10 million, whatever. Create the 100% of which, if we are two, each of you give each other 20%, 20%, or 30%, 30%. Leave 30% for investors, and then leave 10% for participation in equity for the employees to come.
Wow, this is interesting. Wow. All right. If you just tuned in, it's a Legal Insider. We do this every Thursday. Of course, my guest today, Johnson Kariuki and Tim Dagori, and of course, Mutua Mutuku, Wakili. We talk about the legal framework and startups in Kenya. Your questions, get them in fast and thick. 0701984984. Hashtag quick one, Wakili. Hashtag the Legal Insider. Take a short break. Take to the break with Yunia Amunga. 7 o'clock. It continues. Good evening. Yeah, 4 minutes past 7 o'clock. Thank you so much, Yunia Amunga, the Legal Insider. It's here, it's happening. And write to us. Hashtag quick one, Wakili. And this Zach says, hashtag the legal perspective. All right, that's okay. That's still okay. And he says, all right, on time, listening to my free class on Matters the Law. Startup, it is absolutely enjoying. So people actually do listening.
Oh, you're right. Happy to hear.
Absolutely.
That.
Some are quiet. They don't talk, but you meet them later. They're like, can you clarify something what Karaoke said? I don't even remember. Boy,
at the end of the show, I'll tell you a story.
Yes, please.
At the end of the show.
All right.
But Tim was clarifying on something before we went for the news.
So you were asking about investment. So usually what I'd advise those two founders who we are thinking about is at the get-go, at the point of incorporating the entity, provide for the investors. So rule of thumb, maybe if you're two founders, do 30-30, leave 30 for the investor, and then leave 10 for employee participation. Yeah.
Kerry Meskeo.
Yeah, Meskeo. Sorry, I was telling some people to go around. They wanted to come through the glass. Okay, here's the situation. Okay, you've started this company with somebody, and you guys are doing well. And if there was no proper legal framework, and one of them, God forbid, has to go to the next life, what happens to their shares? What happens to everything and anything that they brought into the company, what actually happens? Who do you go to? Karaoke?
Okay. So in some of the agreements that govern a company, in this case, the Articles of Association, there's something we provide for called transmission. Mm-hmm. So there's a transmission clause that talks about what should happen in such an instance.
Let
and what is supposed to happen.
Let me write it down. Transmission.
Yeah.
Keep going. Keep
Of course, there's going to be an independent process of succession, mm-hmm. where people go to court and validate that the person who was supposed to get the shares pursuant to a will written by the shareholder is ABCD. But when he comes to the company with that grant that he's been given by court to confirm that he's a person, mm-hmm. then there is a process provided for in the documentation of the company that now provides how those shares should be transferred to them.
Absolutely. Even going back to the founder's agreement, those are some of the things that you could throw in there.
Right. So that you don't lose the point that the team said. He said you can do, there's a 10% that should be left to the employees. Right?
Yes.
If I had you right.
Yes, yes.
Just guide us through that. And I know it has a name in law, but mm-hmm. I wanted to you to break down to our listeners. Why should I give my employees who I'm paying for, I'm extracting value from them and extracting something from me, why should I give them a stake at the company as well?
All right. Now you're building something fast and you want to do it, something big and you want to do it fast. So obviously you'd want to attract the highest top talent that there is available, and top talent needs to be incentivized. So in addition to paying them their salary, their salary, you want to give them some stake in the company. You want them to feel that this company that we are building, we own a part of it. But also another benefit to you as the founder who's employing these people is, going back to remember the vesting schedule, you could actually have that these shares that they're supposed to get in the company vests over a period of time. So that means if you're hiring, for instance, maybe you're hiring a head of design or other key role in your startup, and you want this guy to be there at least to build the product until a certain level, you want to lock him in for 2 years, 3 years maybe. So you will say, okay, there's equity participation. That means you're an owner of the company, and your shares will vest in so many years or in so many months or etc. So those are the two reasons.
I think you can add something here. For me, I don't consider it there's no rule of thumb, so it all depends on what value you're getting from these employees, because some of the startups are very founder centric. So you might find that the only people who have done most of the work are two or three. But also now, based on, as he said, the employee retention, and based on how you want to motivate them to stay, they might have some skin in the game, in which case then you will say, if you want them for 6 years, you give them a certain amount of shares that is going to vest over a period of 6 years. There are also some other added perks. You can add inclusions. Like if somebody lives in a way that they are not supposed to, like if they quit before, then they give back the shares, or if they are...
And can the shares be converted into money?
You can provide for that as well. You can provide for that as well.
Okay.
Because I've seen instances where they'll say, you'll have to leave, but they lock in a price at which you will leave. So whether or not the company will be worth a billion, you will leave at a particular amount.
Who decides? Sorry to digress a bit.
Of course, it's the board and the company and all that. So they sit down and see, this is how we want to structure it based on our needs. Okay. So it's a very narcissistic approach.
Yes, it is.
This, because they want to control the employee by giving him value. So he will still get some value out of it, but it is mostly informed by the needs of the company and how long they want to keep the employee.
Charles, yes. So let me ask. So this, you call it ESOP?
Yes.
In full meaning?
Employee Share Ownership Plan.
Yes.
Yes.
Can I write it now?
Yeah.
Now, if I want to leave before my time
as
stipulated in the ESOP.
Yes.
And Tim happens to be one of the employees as well. Mm-hmm. Can I transfer my shares to Tim in a way that where I think that is a value and where we have consideration? Is it possible to do that instead of transferring to the company?
I do not see the incentive, but if the trust deed provided that that is how it should happen, then that's how it should happen. So ideally, an ESOP is established through a trust. So you set up a trust where you have trustees who are supposed to now be the people who work or act on behalf of the trustee. Of the trust. So this can be employees, sometimes it's people in the management, depending on how it's structured. So if that structure allows for that, I don't see why not, but there's no incentive whatsoever, because if you leave, Tim is not going to do his role and also take up yours. So I think that's where I'm seeing
and
it.
And if I was that founder's lawyer, I would tell them not to allow that. But actually, the another option, if you don't want to get so technical and set up a trust, is you can have phantom shares. So, meaning that the employee gets value of those shares and they will vest in that way, but they get cash, not actual shares. Because oftentimes you'll find when someone is leaving, they want to go and be done with you. You give me my money, may I go?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, yeah. So that's another option.
Mm. Mm. Wow. Okay, as we move on quickly, I was just writing some of my notes here, and I'd like Tim and Kariki, any of you, to jump in. And this one is for the listener, because you're the choppies, the three of you. Anyway, the importance of... I've learned so much from you lawyers. The importance of legal requirements in Kenya. Well, it's worldwide, but in Kenya. And I just have a few notes here. Anyone can jump in here. Effectively maximize government goodwill. Business shall be duly registered and fully compliant with legal requirements. The legal requirements. Compliance helps you steer clear of your business getting embroiled in legal disputes and closure. Mm-hmm. What is the worst case scenario you have seen, Kariki? Let me start with you. because things happen.
Yeah, worst case
things
scenario.
Happen. Because, yeah. And I like what Butuo was saying, and when Tim said, look, just give me my money, okay? Me, I'm done with you guys. If not, me, I'm going to court and I'm suing you guys for $300 billion or something.
Yeah.
Then it becomes this really ugly thing, you know, and us media people, we can't be very kind when things like that. Yeah. We just blow them out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of compliance, and I know Tim will jump in and talk about it a little bit, but I think the worst I've seen from a business perspective is a license taken away from an entity. And you see, some of the businesses that we are talking about are businesses that will highly rely on the value of a license.
Okay.
And when you have that license, there are always guidelines that you're supposed to follow. And if you do not follow them, then the license is taken away. And you will see some of the businesses just crumble because now they don't have the legal right to do what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if as startups grow, and even as they start, you can have founders who have a lawyer friend, you know. And as they grow now, you start seeing maybe they incorporate, they bring in a company secretary to sit on the board. They bring in a legal advisor. Some of them also have retainers with lawyers. So if they have a quick question or if they have a monthly health check, he will come and just go through it and see how they're doing with complying with all the laws. Maybe Tim can talk about compliance with employment requirements, employee requirements and all that.
Well, I was going to share a war story.
Yes, war story. We love stories, please.
No, you know, there's so the, and I didn't talk about it, the organization I work for is called Innolegis, and it's basically legal and compliance for startups in a box. Now, one of the things we were doing is we're doing research on startups and where they place legal and compliance. And a question that we're asking is, on your priority stack in your startup, where do you rank legal and compliance? And everyone said it's very important, but the Kenya shillings and the dollars are not following. understandably, yes. Understandably so, because as a founder, I'm prioritizing the day-to-day operational stuff, and sometimes legal and you know, you're not seeing the challenge there. But to share a story, and this happened recently to a client who, I won't say the country, but it's Africa's most populous nation. So these guys, they work in finance, a digital financial services provider. The founders had set up the entity, and it was a payment service provider.
Okay.
So the central bank in that country had said, look, you guys, they were clamping down and saying, for all transactions on your platform, let those people who are transacting, let them use the equivalent of their ID. Let them use their ID. But what a lot of these guys were doing, I mean, you're starting up, you're setting up, you're not, they were using the founders' IDs. So for each transaction, for it to clear, it was clearing with the founder's ID. Obviously, we know how some people can be, and guys were using that for fraud, you know, and money laundering and all these other things. We all know that some of these anti-money laundering laws are pretty. And the founders themselves, in their own person, as individuals, they're the ones who got in trouble. You know, you have to start answering for transactions that you have no clue. What happened. So simple things like that, even just being told, look, Central Bank of Kenya has come up with this new law. Or going back to our butchery guy, I love meat, Mini Masai. Mm-hmm. But going back to our butchery guy, who's the regulator for Nyama? But the Kebs, for instance, or whoever, has said for you to sell this amount of meat, you need to do A, B, C, D, and you don't do it. You're the one who gets in trouble.
So that's very true. So just to pick up on that conversation, we see startups in Kenya do 1 year, do the second year, raise a lot of capital, ridiculous amounts of money, and then the third year something happens. What is it that they get wrong? Is it the market dynamics? Is it that the founders get so greedy? Is it that they have a very shaky corporate governance aspect? What is it? Because I think we're having a conversation with you, and there are only two unicorns from Kenya. Unicorn. I'm referring to it in a very loose term,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
When you compare the market in Kenya, you compare the market in Joburg, you compare the market in Cairo, you compare the market in Nigeria.
Mm.
We have the least unicorns.
Mm.
What is it that we get wrong? Is it founders' greed? Is it corporate government? What is it? Is it the market? What is it?
Hey, so I think there are many factors. It's very difficult to give like a blanket, you know, say this is what happened. Of course, there are those founders who, you know, they played dirty or whatever. But one, we need to appreciate that a startup, going back to the definition, you know, it's something new, it's novel, you're using innovation and technology, you're using AI, for example.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's an experiment. It may or may not work. And people who fund startups, those guys, the VCs, the angels, whoever, they know it's an experiment. And going into it, they know it's an experiment. That's why they really vet the founders and say, are these guys serious? Do they really want to do this? Are they committed to the cause? So in many instances, it's just that it's an experiment that didn't work. Or market forces, one point people wanted XYZ, they didn't. Or at the beginning, you thought that this could work and it didn't. This is what people say, product market fit. You didn't achieve it. You worked on a product, you thought it was going to be a thing and people just didn't want it. And it happens.
I think just to add, of course, there's some bad crops. And we've seen them. We've seen companies that raise bonds that are approved by the Capital Markets Authority, and in 2 years they're going under. Then you try to trace the money and see it was sent to another country, it was misappropriated and all that. But the kind of investors we're talking about, they just don't invest in something. So they will first look at the proof of concept of whatever it is you want to offer with your startup. There's also a very rigid due diligence that happens, both legal and financial. So they look at your projections and actually see whether this is something that can actually be achieved. From a legal perspective, they look at whether your house is in order generally. So they look at everything from setup of the business, your corporate governance. Corporate governance is important.
What is corporate governance?
Corporate governance is
startup.
I don't have a textbook definition, but what corporate governance is how efficient is the organ that makes decision in the company. And in this case, I would be looking at the board. So, of course, you have startups that are started by family members. So it's a brother and another brother. But you will see when you're now bringing in investors, they have some requirements. Like we either come in and have one of us sitting on your board, or we have an independent board member who now comes and starts adding some value in how decisions are made in the company. So for regulated companies, you do have laws that require you to have maybe like 2/3 who are independent. Independent means they do not have shares in the company. So they do not have any interest. So they're looking at it from a very objective perspective. Mm-hmm. So every decision that is made, they do not have interest in it. You get? Yeah. So corporate governance, in my opinion, is just how you constitute the board. And the board should be constituted based on your needs. So as you're starting off, maybe you don't need independent directors because you're just developing the product. But at some point when you start making critical decisions, then you start bringing in a various composition. Maybe you might need somebody in finance. You might need somebody in accounts. You might need a few ladies just to balance and see that the company is actually being run efficiently. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic.
Even something as simple as separating your bank accounts. I think one of my predictions for this 2024-2025 is startups will be required from the get-go to separate their bank accounts. That falls under what's your decision-making process like? At the beginning of a business, we tend to, you know, because you're like, it's my right pocket and my left pocket is the same anyway. But at the point when you're discussing with other people who you want to bring on board, advisors, investors, whoever, they'll be like, okay, have you separated your accounts? And they'll check from the beginning, what have you been doing? Because if we're looking at your books and we're saying, okay, we want to check out your revenue, is it what you say it is? It would help if you had separated your bank accounts from the beginning. Something as small as that.
All right. Gentlemen, this one, okay, the one is a story. The other one is just something that I was writing down.
Stories are jabba.
No, this is something that actually happened. Yeah. And you know what is happening at the city center. There are people who are walking up in briefcases and says, I want your business. And you tell him it's about 10 million. He tells you, I'll give you 25. And you're like, you know what, take the money, walk into the sunset in a situation like that. But very quickly before that, the question is the legal considerations to mitigating startup failures in Kenya. And there were two companies. One, it's a food company, I don't want to mention them. In 2022, they were unable to raise funds to maintain operations. So 90 employees lost jobs. And there was another one in 2021, had over 20,000 vendors and only 7% were active. They started up very well. I know one of them very well. Then, I don't know whether it's Corona or not, they just sunk and went. What happens in a situation like that? What happened to the employees? Look, it's Corona. There's no business. People are not coming in. We don't have money in the bank. What am I supposed to do? What do I tell my lawyer Mutua here? What can he advise me what to do? Where do I go? Because that was huge what happened then. So many companies just...
And that's still going on, even up to today. So we do have some businesses that have a lot of assets actually, but they are not able to get their day to day costs of running. So, of course, employee needs informed by the requirements and the needs of the company. So if I don't have something to sell, for instance, I don't need sales agents. If I don't have a reception, I don't need a receptionist. And at one point, I might need a receptionist, and then I do not need one now. So the law provides a process of redundancy. And of course, I'm being the devil's advocate here, because of course you can't wait for your company to run to the ground gotten to a point where your operations are not making sense and you think you can throw in the towel now, there's a process through which the recovery of assets is done. And
you declare bankruptcy or
something like that. Yeah. You go through a process called, I think, liquidation. So it might be voluntary or not. It can be initiated by your debtors or your creditors, sorry. So they come and say, this guy is not able to pay us, so we are going to close down the company. So what would you do as a founder in that case? So you come to Mutua. Mutua will tell you, there are so many things we need and there are so many things we don't need. Some of the people you don't need might be the employees. So there's a legal process that should be followed in laying them off, and there are benefits that you're supposed to pay them based on the number of years that they have been in the business.
Wow. Okay. Hi. Okay. Mutua.
Yeah. I've seen Tim doing amenifanya tu hivi. So please, he has something to say.
No.
I
want to speak to the startup employees. I hold a lot of grace for startup founders because it's an experiment. This thing could work or not. So as an employee going into a startup, the same way the venture capitalist, the investor is vetting the startup and the founders. Vet those guys. What have they done before? You know. Can these people do what they're saying they're doing? If Mutua and I are saying we're building a rocket to go to Mars and none of us has, you know, any experience, we can't be able to do that, right? But at the same time, also the founder, it's important to keep the communication channels open with your employees on what's going on, right? One of the things that management, and there are many other businesses that have gone that direction that maybe we didn't even hear about, but just keeping that communication open with your team.
Which brings a question about startup incubators. I mean, do we have them in Kenya? Because I don't know, my business to just disappear like that. Do we have them in Kenya?
Ziko nyingi sana. In fact,
Talk to the listener and tell them where they can go. I mean,
okay.
Guys are starting.
Let me plug an organization called ASEC. Okay. ASEC, which is the Association of Startup and SME Enablers of Kenya.
Oh, I like that.
ASEC is the umbrella body of those incubators, those accelerators, also known as employee support organizations. Mm-hmm. So there are very many, like my former employer, the iHub. Mm-hmm. There are several. There are many. Okay. Yes. But let them go to ASEC and ask ASEC. ASEC will be able, they have over 140 members. Who are those accelerators, those incubators? Wow. And so if you're...
What's the difference between incubators and accelerators?
Hey, so an incubator is for, you have an idea, you haven't really thought it through, or it's very young, you know, it's still fresh. It's maybe you don't even have users, you don't have a product, you only have the MVP, your revenue ni kidogo. An accelerator is for an entity that has figured some of those things out. But the truth is, often we use the terms interchangeably. They do the same thing. What matters is the stage that you can be very early, you know. And even some of those stages, I think sometimes some of us tech bros, we just like to throw them around. But it's, you know, pre-seed, seed. It's just early stage, growth stage.
Wow, gentlemen.
Charlie, there's a question I had for Johnson.
Yes, very quickly.
Very quickly, I know.
1 minute.
He didn't define after how long does a startup stop being a startup.
Yes.
And I will define it the streets way. After 3 years, you're not a startup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that I was told because I also started a startup called a law firm. and I showed up somewhere for a meeting in a very big office.
Yeah.
And they asked me how old I am. I told them I've just turned 3.
Yeah.
They said I should never call myself a startup.
You're already established. Yeah. Wow. Gentlemen, this is an onion. We can't get to the bottom. I want to say thank you so much. Tim, thank you so much, Ty Johnson, for coming here and talking about this. You know, they need to come back again.
Of course they need. We have just barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, there's so many stories by what people are going through. I have enough money to buy off your company. What I do? Stories like those are like, wow, okay. Thank you so much, Tim. How can
Thank you.
Right now listening to you. He's on a startup level.
Yes.
How can they find you?
They can look for me on social media. I'm Tim Dagori across the board. On LinkedIn, I'm Tim Dagori. On Twitter, Dagori, that's Dagori_.
Okay.
Just shoot me a DM, I'll respond.
Fantastic. Karis?
Mine, you just go to our website, JP Advocates LLP. You just search, it will be the first thing that comes. If you click under my photo, all my contact information is there.
Thank you so much. How do they get in touch with Mutu?
Every single Tandem here, baby.
Yes.
Absolutely. This conversation continues. It never stops. 0701984984. Keep them coming in. You might answer them next week. Hashtag quick one, Wakili. Hashtag the legal insider. Once again, gentlemen, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for hosting us.
Anytime. Yeah. Karibu sana.
Drum rolls, guys. Yes.
All right. My producer has walked in, Andy Cup. Andy, don't talk. Wanjira on the hype. Stand by.